Welcome to Mythic Imagination. I'm Honora Foa. Tonight, we'll be sharing a special winter solstice story about the life of a magic stag who, by his mythic transcendence, changed the world.
I am the stag. Leaping through the sky as if on wings of air, my hooves they pound and beat the snowy ground. In my wake a set of prints so deep and clear the hunter's eyes are made to water. My coat is fine, our coat so fair and warm with hair so thick, the sheen from it glows like silver in the moonlight. Moonlight leaving puddles on the shimmering forest floor. In the spring, I nibble on the fresh new grasses at the forest edge. Carry then I the scent of new life all about me, and I do leap for joy at mighty winter's heavy passing. In the summer light, I travel far afield, seeking out the scent of females. Such great strength is lent unto me that ever do I paw the soft warm ground, as blinding heat enters into every limb, and I with strength tenfold will meet and match the noble prowess than of any other stag who carries thus this newborn fire within his eyes. Thou will we parry stroke for stroke, and lunge and writhe, and hit each other blow for blow, and force for force, until the one who cools the quickest learns to graze alone, while I, the great victorious one, will court and pine and mate with her, the sweetest scented, until the fire has passed and she is filled with life abundant. In the autumn, I do rejoice at summer's passing, for lo, the passion flees, and I must jump at smells lost in summer's weight. Quickening at the clean, fresh scents, I'm beckoned to the woodlands where I will await the time my fairest mate must wait, as together we pass on through the rain of falling leaves, over the crackling carpet at our feet, to a bower deep and hidden, where she rests, singing to me the song fresh new life approaching. And now it is the time of winter, heavy winter. Such a coat of white is worn that any other eyes but these are blinded by the luminescence reflected from this dazzling crystalline jacket. I do rejoice in winter's first white blanket. It covers one and all as if to say, sleep now, my children, sleep. And I would sleep in the deepening stillness, but my heart, it keeps me stirred. Constantly I wander far to guard my realm as my mate sleeps and dreams, resting in a happy slumber. There my son grows inside of her, where it is safe and soft and warm. So while the others sleep, the winter days and burrows snug, deep within the skin of earth, I choose my steps most cautiously and walk the wintry silence like the very Lord I am. Tonight, as I wander in the moonlight stillness, I sense a difference in the cold and frosty night. As if I could now catch a fleeting glance of something stirring far away. But time and time again, as I turn to glimpse the darkness taking form, the form has once more vanished like a mist at dawn. And the trees, they cling to nothing. What can this mean, think I? And so I wander through my mind, through times long past and seasons which have come and gone before me. My antlers, they grow longer every year. And I am as fine and virile a stag as has walked these paths in all my years. None dare stand before me, and there is nothing which I fear that walks on fours or sails the skies on wings of finest feather down. The night is long. I think perhaps that is the change I sense growing in the east. It is as if I hear a whisper on the wind, yet there is no breeze stirring in the forest. And high above the greater currents rise and fall, but ever am I deaf to them. For these great currents touch the forest not. Not until tonight. Tonight there is a hint of greatness descending like moonbeams or thistle down or dust which, having been raised along the forest way, finds itself aloft sometime, but ever does resettle into such sure patterns on the earth. Tonight I see a vision growing which I have not before this ever sensed. And lo, it makes me to be filled with wonder and also awe, for nothing has descended thus or sparkled thus where there is no light. For the light I see is not with these eyes, but some other light which, when I focus my keen gaze upon it, melts away, elusive as the night itself. I stop to ponder this nearby a blasted oak. Ever as my eyes gaze upon its darkened center, I see stubs where new life springs from hidden roots, the place wherein the life force dwells. Suddenly, a sound. Faint again, but not yet like any other sounds I've heard on this, the longest night in all the year. No, this sound is real, and comes from creatures hot and filled and driven by a lust unlike the sense of wonder which is driven by the silent winds. No, this is no stuff of dreams. It is the stuff of man. Yea, even as I speak, my senses reel, for I see the hunter's cap and a face as taunt as the very string of bow he pulls, and looks at me he right in the eye. For long has he sat waiting in this very dell to meet me on the breast of snow which keeps the secrets of the spring. Fleetingly we gaze in wonder. Our eyes, one eye. Our hearts, one heart. For in a moment all walls are rent, and we do live together in this space of silence, greater than the silence of the night, greater than the silence of the water on the lake, greater than the silence of my son's new birth in spring. In this silence, captive are we both. In a spasm which is greater than one which grips my limbs in mating, torn am I from the very ground on which I have stood for these long silent moments, and my hooves do crash through frozen brambles, and feel I then their icy fingers not. For blood is pounding, and I see with eyes so great and wide the very outline of the hairpin fractures on the rocks, which spark with great blue fire as my hooves strike them again, and then again, and then again. Where then in a moment I do leap as if this bound would take me from the very earth itself. And in this quiet moment, when my great grand weight lifts off from the snow, and in the silence thus produced, I am freed then from the ever-present chase. I sense the footsteps now, which are not mine, and hear the singing of a stream, and then the wings of something like a sound of feathers whistling closely round me. In this great suspended moment, I am loose and free, and think I how magnificent my heart would feel if ever I could sail this way forever, never having need to lift these great swift legs again, or flee in wild pursuit of life. Then, like a dagger in my heart, I feel the piercing arrow strike, impaling me upon its narrow sharpness as if I were a rabbit roasting at the pit, or pheasant then, or grouse, which daily is the meat of men. Know I now, as I crash to the ground, that I too am but an ample meal for mouths that ooh and ah and taste the flesh of me, which has been victorious over stags and wolves and females of my kind, but which now is laying slain and vanquished by a tiny stick. The longest night it is, and long I lay and sense I the life force draining from me as I watch with my uplifted eye the hunter who does gaze at me from a simple distance, and blows he upon his hands the fingers which did loose the death stick and fling it surely at my heart to keep his breath of warmth close in him, while mine does lose its heat, and soon it will cease to come at all. No, I cry, and something deep inside of me does see the red of blood, and a passion deep and a scent like that of my fair mate does signal the blurring of the pain within me. And I cry out a challenge in my anger, which does not allow the stick to stop me. But lo, now, I do throw my weight onto my limbs and force myself to lunge out at the darkness. Again, I think, my feet will I feel again beneath me, and this earth, which is my home, will see me not, for I will flee like doves into the wind and make for me another home so far away that no felled stick will bring me down against the snowy ground. And I will rise up like a star and know the winds forever. Magic, then, is what this longest night does sing unto me. And I do laugh and snort inside my stilling heart. There is no hunter born of woman who has yet to build a string with tension yet enough to pierce the spirit in this self. And then I toss my horns, which gleam and glisten in the wintry moon. The first full moon in all my life, think I. And dance I then around the hunching hunter who knows the greatening jealous fear of me. The stag of magic who does paw and prance, singing a song so long and dear that has not yet been heard by ears, by the man or beast. Oh, joyous song! O song of life, delivered am I from this strife, and hunters, they do know me not. For free am I, more free than they, for what see they of this fine form which shimmers like the fairies dancing in the dew, finer now than any coat of any stag that yet puts hoof to earth. Fly then, fly, cry I, and lo, I see approaching near the moon the phantom outlines of the many deer who jump and leap and paw the very stars before them. And carry they great wonder like moonbeams stuffed in bags of spider's webbing. And know I that I must leap with all my might if I'm to catch them in their flight. And now, the chase. It is the chase to which my hooves did ever bend when I was but a young one, walking thus upon the forest floor. The chase, the stars, the longest night forever. Will I now traverse the stars and bring with me a promise which the great ones do implore their kindred souls on earth to see? The promise then means this to me. I am not dead, though frozen is the meat of me upon the ground. I am not dead, though men will chew me with their teeth and scrape the very flesh of me from my stiffening hide. I am not dead, for deep inside my true mate self, another of me grows, and grows to be thus born again in fields of summer, where the wild gorse bushes grow. And I will live again, and live again, and carry I the cradle to the moon, where will be born again the sun. As from this moment on, my spirit will be born thus ever upward, until from high upon my throne, I will transmute, and be born also, I along with the very sun of mine, a different sun. The promise then of light on this, the darkest, darkest, longest night.
Now that we've listened to a story about the winter solstice from the point of view of the hunted, let's hear about the dark of the year from a human point of view, the hunter. To help us understand insights into the mind of the hunter, we have with us on the phone John Matthews. John is speaking to us from his home in Oxford, England. He and his lovely wife, Catelyn, were presenters at last year's Mythic Journeys and will join us again for our conference in 2006. They've written a wonderful book called The Winter Solstice, The Sacred Traditions of Christmas. We'll be drawing from their book to help us glean insights into why the story of a stag fits within a mythic structure. John, in the Northern Hemisphere, the days are short and the nights are long. It's gotten really dark here in Atlanta. What is it like where you are?
Okay, well, right now I'm looking out of the window into the dark, of course, because it's much later here. And it is raining, which is what it's been doing for most of the day. And it's wet and cold and pretty wintry on the whole.
We're all really feeling that, the cold and the dark. What impact does that have on the celebrations and rituals at this time of year?
Of course, we live much further north than you guys do. And it's definitely already much darker here. It starts getting dark around about 4 and it stays dark. And I think this is one of the reasons why our ancestors felt that this was such an important time of the year, and why it was so important to do something to bring back the light. Because the darker it got, and the longer the nights were, and the less they could see of the sun, the more concerned they were that the sun might not come back. And so they had to do things to encourage it to come back. And that's really where the whole mystery of the solstice begins, with the idea of trying to persuade the sun to stay in the sky so that we could all carry on living.
When we talk about the sun's return, what is the essence of this mystery concerning dark as the seedbed of light?
There's something very important about darkness. I mean, without light, you can't have dark. Without dark, you can't have light. The two things are contrasting. And it's very important, I think, that people who, especially people who lived in distant past and who didn't have access to electric light, for instance, that they were able to feel that the darkness would give rise to something new. The end of the year in darkness is preparatory for the beginning of the new year in light. And I think that's why so many of the ceremonies that we know about from the ancient times, from the ancient and early days when they celebrated the solstice at winter, was this idea that as the sun got lower in the sky, as everything got darker, there was going to be the promise of light returning, and that anything we could do to encourage it would be helpful. And of course, the first and most important thing that you did to encourage that was to light fires. So I think that if you think back into those very distant times, the year, the evening of the night of the solstice must have been full of fires. There must have been people lighting fires everywhere. They must have been continually piling more logs on, piling more stuff onto the fire to make it brighter and bigger so that they could encourage the sun to come back. And out of that came this whole idea of looking into the darkness to see the future. And this is what shamans, for instance, have done from very early times. They've looked into the dark. They've looked into the innermost places, both of the soul and of the universe, in order to bring back hope, to bring back messages, to bring back traditions and ideas that became set almost immediately into the idea of beliefs. So the dark is as important as the light, and we acknowledge both at the time of the midsummer, but it's the light we're calling to, it's the light we're encouraging to come back.
In your book, you mention the hunting of spirit deer. Why is this recurring theme of the hunt so important at this time of year?
One of the really important things that took place around about the solstice, well, in fact, not just at the solstice, but throughout much of the winter period, was the importance of the hunt. Because, again, this is a time when food is scarce, when everything's colder, when you don't want to go out so much. But you had to make yourself go out and catch something to eat. And I think that is perhaps the reason why, one of the reasons why, that the idea of the hunt became so important at this time of year and was so much celebrated and so much included in the ceremonies and rituals of the time. Deer, of course, deer and stags especially are very important. The further north you go, the more you find the forests in the northern world ringing out at this time of year with the sound of the stags. And I think that that in itself is seen as a magical sound, and that the action of going in search of these creatures, of catching these creatures, was a very magical action. And that may in fact lead in some ways to the whole idea of the importance of reindeer, for example, in the later mythology of Father Christmas and Santa. Why should his sleigh be pulled with reindeer? Well, not necessarily because he comes from supposedly the North Pole or Lapland, but because deer are magical creatures. All over the world, there are songs and poems and chants that refer to this wonderful hunt, the wonderful magic of the hunt, seeking for the deer above all things.
In this idea of the hunt, you mention that the oldest known animal masks are of deer. Why are these masks so important in ancient rituals?
There's something about the magic of the hunt that goes back a very long way in time. I mean, among all of the ancient masks that we found, for instance, in sites as far away as Germany and Britain, and indeed many among the Native American peoples, many of these are deer masks, and there are an enormous collection of songs and chants that come out of the Native American tradition for instance, which are all to do with hunting the deer. So deer have obviously been around for a very long time in a magical sense. You know, I mean, it's not accidental that that Santa sleigh is pulled by reindeer, because I think they're really taking him on something like an archetypal shamanic journey into the heavens. He goes into the heavens to bring back gifts. And that's part of the, that's one of the reasons why I think we have to look a long way back in time to find Santa. But it's not just that. The whole thing about antlers, about wearing the horns, you know, there's the famous lines in Shakespeare's As You Like It, where there's a song about, take no scorn to wear a horn. It was a crest ere thou wast born, thy father's father bore it, and thy father wore it too. It's a great song, a great Shakespearean song, and what it's really saying about it here is the whole ancient tradition of wearing horns. And even today, still in Britain, we have an ancient custom known as the Abbot's Bromley Horn Dance, which is performed every year. In this, a very ancient set of antlers, possibly thousands of years old, are carried in procession over the heads of the people who are dancing and taking part in the ceremony. So the whole tradition, the whole long tradition of going, goes back a very long way. The idea of catching the deer, of becoming one with the deer so that you can catch it, of taking its horns and wearing the horns, perhaps as a token of having caught and hunted down and caught the animal, perhaps indeed taking on something of its own spirit.
That's a beautiful song from Shakespeare. Could you read the whole piece for us?
What shall he have that killed the deer, his leather skin and horns to wear? Take you no scorn to wear a horn. It was a crest ere thou wast born. Thy father's father bore it, and thy father wore it too. The horn, the lusty horn, is not a thing to laugh to scorn.
John, thank you for being with us on our special Mythic Imagination podcast for the winter solstice. We look forward to seeing you next June at Mythic Journeys 2006.
It's been great talking to you, and I look forward to seeing you again next year at the Mythic Journeys Conference.
Mythic Imagination is a production of the Mythic Imagination Institute. The sound designer for Mythic Imagination is Brad Barnett. Our producer is Donna Barnett. Special thanks to Creative Digital Group for the generous use of their studio. Find them on the web at creativedigitalgroup.com. Mythic Imagination's musical introduction was by Jeffrey Armus. He can be found on the web at jeffreyarmus.com. That's GeoffreyArmes.com. The voice of the stag was performed by Greg Oliver. Brad Barnett created the music. The stag was written by Donna Barnett. It was a pleasure speaking with John Matthews on the mythos of sun return and the magic of the spirit deer. We'll be hearing from Catlin Matthews in our next podcast of Mythic Imagination. They can be found on the web at hallowquest.org.uk, hallow, H-A-L-L-O-W, quest, Q-U-E-S-T, .org.uk. We'd also love to hear from you. Please email your comments to info@mythicjourneys.org. To express our appreciation for the animals that grace our lives and provide us with sustenance, we'll leave you with John Matthews, reading from Yaki Deer Songs, poetical pieces collected and edited by Larry Evers and Felipe S. Molina.
Although unseen in the wilderness, I am just running. My antler crown with these three branches is showing, moving. Over there, I, in the center of the flower-covered grove, I am walking. My antler crown with those three branches is showing, moving.
Remember, at Mythic Imagination, we believe every life is a story, and a story can change the world.